drums, music, and other noise. This episode is in English. Almost the whole episode, except for a couple of minutes in the start where I'm waiting for my guest to show up. My guest this time is, as you probably already have guessed, an English-speaking individual. I was in Florida this April on a road trip with my family, and I was visiting my good friend Terry Hank in West Palm Beach. Another friend of mine is a drummer who Terry often uses, Chris Pete. Chris was having this gig in a warehouse in West Palm Beach, so I met up with Chris to have him as a guest on my podcast. Chris is a hard-working drummer who plays a lot with different artists, but mainly with a guitar player called JP Source. He has his own studio and plays piano, bass, and God knows how many instruments. And that's a little strange, because this guy didn't touch any instruments before turning 25, even not the drums. He was a car salesman in a family business with his uncle, all from the Italian side, and as we all know, family is molto importante. But somehow it seems to me that all his love for music stuck inside his head in secret chambers and came out after he set up the drum set he got for helping an old drummer moving. You can hear that story and many more in my conversation with Chris Pete. I will start off in Norwegian, where I'm just waiting for Chris to arrive in something I thought was a Toyota, but no. We had a really nerdy and interesting chat while Chris was setting up his kit before we went outside in the sun to complete our conversation. So enjoy my conversation with Chris Pete, an elegant, brilliant drummer. Da på 29th Street. På noe som heter for Northwood Art and Music. Det et gammelt lager som gjort om til et spillested. Det liksom ganske hippt. Her skal JP Source spille med Chris Pete på trommer, og jeg venter på at han skal komme, så at jeg kan ta en prat med han. Jeg har forberedt meg litt, så det skal nok gå greit, selv om vi ikke har all verdens tid. Han skal sette opp, og skal, nå er klokka fem, kvart over fem. Han skal sette opp trommer og har, jeg vet ikke hvor mye lydprøve de har, de har kanskje vært der før, og det liksom bare plug and play. Men så finner vi oss en rolig krok, og så setter vi oss ned og prater litt. Denne gangen så tenker jeg at gjesten min nok sannsynligvis ikke kommer til å forstå mye hvis jeg begynner å plapre på norsk, så jeg tror at I dag så må vi ta det på engelsk, men jeg tenker at også at de fleste av mine lyttere, de såpass bevandret i språk at engelsk skulle ikke være noe problem å følge med på. Så da får vi vente litt da. Ja, da forvirrer jeg meg inn I the warehouse her. Her en søt liten scene med et pøl trommesett på. Hva det slags pøl det her da? Ja, pøl roadshow. Det vel noe sånn eksportlignende bullshit, tenker jeg. Her det jævlig kult. Jeg skal ta noen bilder og legge ut på fjesboka. Det faktisk akkurat nå absolutt ingen her. Det bare litt sånn laidback musikk her. Så. Ja. Nei, jeg får gå ut og se om jeg ser Chris Pete. Kommer kjørende I sin Toyota. So, here you arrive in a fucking Thunderbird.
Yes.
From what?
1964.
Yeah. With your drums in the back seat.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
In the trunk, yeah.
In the trunk and the back seat.
Yeah, it fits. It,
as long as it fits. Because I said to my podcast listeners that you came in a Toyota, but
yeah,
because you left left me in a Toyota the other day.
I came back to this.
That's
it's fun.
Some heavy duty.
Yeah, it's iron, man.
It is.
So should I set up real fast?
Yeah, it's done.
10 minutes.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. That's cool.
And there's places to go. And
Yeah. That's nice. So, oh my God.
So it's all original. Some old man had it, you know, and he died.
Yeah.
And he just left it sitting for years. And my friend got it. And he, I don't know what to do with it. It don't work. It don't run. The brakes don't. It doesn't go. It doesn't stop.
Yeah.
So I go, that's why I bought it. I go, you know, I'll try it.
You bought it from this guy?
Yeah.
And
that's just a little every day. You work on it every day.
Yeah. I figured you wouldn't play on those Pearl.
I don't mind. JP doesn't like me to play.
Oh, why?
He just hears my drums in his head.
Oh.
Even Double Roads, there's a drum set in the house.
Yeah. No. Wow.
And of course, I prefer my own drums.
Yeah, of course. So this is from 2000, the Gretsch.
Yeah, I think 2001.
Yeah?
I think they might be 2000, but I bought them in 2001.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And I've never played another set, really. I mean, obviously I have for
before
rentals, but before I was going crazy trying to find something I liked.
Okay.
And I really liked the DWs and Yamahas and everything that was...
Yeah.
Because I wanted one set. I was willing to purchase them, to pay, I guess, for a quality set.
Yeah.
That would last me, you know, whatever, 20, 30, forever, many years. And so I was looking for that.
Yeah.
And like I said, I tried all those DW I had, Yamaha, Tama. And I really liked them. And then I go, well, I didn't try the Gretsch yet. So I ordered a Gretsch, this set. And I got it right from the factory. My friend worked there. And he goes, I can get you a deal.
Okay.
At cost. And he sent me a list on any set that's on this list. And I'll go, and I found these. And yeah. It also has a 10-inch tom.
Yeah.
But so I've never used it. It's in the box still. I've never taken it out of the box. It's it.
Oh, yeah. So this is a 22 by 16?
No, 20. This is a small one.
Yeah, it's 20 by 16.
20 by 16 and traditional, 8 by 12 and 14 by 14.
Yeah.
And you know, I like the jazz guys, and they always had Gretsch.
Yeah.
And they had 18s.
Yeah.
But I was like, I don't want to go that little.
Well, you know.
Because I have an 18 set anyway. That's another story.
Yeah, but you know, as we were talking about the other day, the 18 just came because of the trunk of the cab in New York.
Exactly.
You know, because they liked more the 20.
Yeah.
I've been told.
And yeah, me too.
Yeah.
And
so
20.
Yeah.
So the 20s were. Sometimes I wish it might have a 22.
Yeah.
But not really. It's not. Just once in a while.
Yeah.
And so I got these, and just the minute I heard them, I loved them.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, that's the sound I'm hearing in my head that I couldn't get.
Yeah.
From all the other brands.
Yeah.
And then, of course, I had a million vintage sets, right, which I tried all those, and I just had them to collect.
Yeah. Yeah,
old
okay, yeah.
Old Slingerlands, you know.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Which I love them, too.
Yeah.
But then, it's like with JP, he really likes to hear this set. Yeah. And I do, too.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I was like, okay. I really don't use all those sets anymore. They were just sitting in a room, stacked up.
But what do you do if you travel far? Because but you mainly drive when you drive when
yeah,
you play
so,
in.
So they would be in the van for driving.
Yeah.
And then if we're flying, you know, you usually get contacted or we send out our equipment rider.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I tell them what I play.
Yeah.
And sometimes they match it really good. You know.
Yeah, yeah.
Mostly with a 22.
Yeah.
But don't get a Gretsch set, a 22, 12, maybe a 16, 14. And I don't care. I'm really not picky.
No, the picky guy is JP. The guitar player.
He's a creature of habit, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, well, that's okay.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
He really is. You know, he plays the same guitar and amp
forever. Yeah, yeah.
He tries others. And I used to try other things, but like I said, I get too on the road because... And they'll write back and say, hey, we don't have a Gretsch, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
We got a Yamaha, of course. I love Yamaha.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Just their hardware makes sense.
Yeah.
And it's good and it's easy to set up. DW hardware, for me, does not make sense. I get into a lot of trouble with their hardware.
Yeah. How come?
For instance, it's hard to describe without looking at it, but... Like, if you take one DW, sometimes this fits down here if you go where you want it.
Yeah.
And you can't turn the wing nut.
Oh, yeah.
So you got to put it up there so you can tighten the wing nut.
And then you have to adjust the other.
And then you have to adjust the other way.
Yeah.
And it just won't go where you want it.
Exactly, yeah. Strange.
They're very weird.
And that's very strange because Drum Workshop is supposed to be...
They're known for their hardware more than anything.
Yeah, yeah. And then they are... They always find these solutions which should benefit the drummer, you know.
But well, like I said, I bought a VW hardware set.
Yeah.
And I bought the 9000 pedal when it first came out.
Yeah.
It was a titanium, or at least they called it that, titanium series.
Yeah.
It broke.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't play heavy. It broke. Within 2 weeks, it broke. Oh, send it back. Okay. And I did it, and they were good for that. I bought... The cymbal stand, and they had these black plastic levers.
Yeah.
And those broke.
Yeah.
Just from transporting, putting them in the thing. And they sent me metal ones. Levers.
Okay, yeah.
But, you know, 2 weeks without cymbal stands.
Yeah.
So I had to use my old cymbal stand till the parts came. And there was something else I bought from them. The throne. And this thing... broke.
Yeah.
The threaded part, which is odd. And I wrote to them and I never heard back.
Okay.
And I just said, you know what? And I know everyone loves them.
Yeah.
And they really...
I have a 5000 pedal.
Yeah.
And it's good. And I have the biggest throne they have.
Yeah.
Because I have a big ass, you know. Gotta place it somewhere, you know.
Right. I love their top. I still have the top, which is where I got.
Yeah.
I like it because it's hard.
Yeah.
I don't like the squishy.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay, yeah. But I see that you are putting up your original snare drum that belongs to this kit.
Yeah.
But I saw on your list that you... prefer that you have a you have a Superphonic and you prefer an Acrolite and
I have it and I had
but it's so strange because I have a kit a Gretsch kit you know I have two Gretsch kits from 2000
same
and I suddenly started to use those snare drums you know because I found out that they actually sound quite good.
I got it. It's funny, it sounds almost exactly like the Acrolite.
Yeah.
And you know what I did? If you can see it, it's a Pearl Fat Tone hoop.
Okay.
And it's die cast, so it has that. because I tried different hoops. And, you know, the triple flange.
Yeah.
So most of the new triple flange are 2.3 millimeters thick. And it was still too much metal on there.
So what does this hoop do?
So I tried, and I'll go tell you, and I tried the 1.6 millimeter triple flange hoop, and it was too thin, and it was having tuning issues. So it was like backing out all the time.
Yeah, yeah, it's coming
up. Pearl has this one, Fat Tone. It's 1.6 millimeters, so it's the thin metal.
Yeah.
And it's die-cast hoop, so it doesn't move. And you get that, you get the same thing as that, just skinnier, and it opened the drum up tremendously. This had rims mounts on it.
I took that off. I have that.
It's just too bouncy.
And yeah, but you didn't have this, so you have made holes for this.
Yeah, I had a drill hole, so that was...
Yeah.
Once I knew I was going to keep it, because if you drill holes, you know, like the collector guys, they get...
Yeah.
Angry. Like, you drill a hole in that drum. And I put a drill, a kick drum mic inside.
Oh, yeah.
So I have you just plug it in, and there's a kick drum mic built in there.
Yeah, so you have just an XLR.
The first day, it was the first weekend I got the set, and I had a kick drum mic in there, and the lady was dancing. It was the dance floor, it was packed, and she was dancing, and she kicked the kick drum mic stand. It ripped the head, the original head, and that was when I thought right away, I'm going to make a thing. A mount for the...
And that was after 1 week. So after 6 days, you understood that.
And then I put this on, the fiber skin, and that's been on there ever since. I've never changed it.
And you understood that you should keep this forever.
Yeah.
After 6 days.
I knew right then.
That's good.
No, but you know, I didn't drill that hole first.
No. Yeah,
I waited.
Yeah.
I did wait on that.
Yeah, okay.
Because I just had a little wire coming out of the front head.
So what's kept you from doing it?
Just in case I didn't like it. That's original head. So never changed.
Yeah. That was the underskin. For my listeners, he has changed the
top head. But they need it again.
Yeah. But you know, you are what we call a working drummer, so you... You just you just have to do save money where you can save money, you know.
Actually, I have the heads and they're sitting in the house for weeks.
Oh yeah,
I just haven't done it. I have a new set of heads.
So now you're picking up a 15-inch
A's, I think from the 60s, maybe 70s. I'm not sure.
That's
no way to tell. I just.
Yeah.
Word of mouth, when I bought them, the guy said he bought them. Because I bought them sometime in the late 60s or 70s.
I think you can tell by the stamp.
Yeah, I think so. There's a website devoted to that.
Yeah.
Because I do have K's, some old K's.
Yeah.
And I've looked at the stamp. Those were worth checking out.
Yeah.
These are only going to be worth what they're worth. Unless you know it. Maybe you can tell. You see it?
I just saw it. I think that is, the 60s.
Yeah. I love them.
Yeah, they're beautiful. I'll play them, so...
Yeah, they sound
so I know. And then you have two original...
A custom,
which is...
Medium crash.
This
says crash, but I think they're all just... Right down the middle, kind of average weight.
I also have those cymbals, but I use them very often in a studio because they come through, you know.
Yeah, really.
Like in...
They have a nice sound, and they've warmed up over time, I think. Maybe just the dirt on them and everything.
Yeah.
They used to be kind of bright sounding to my ear, and then...
Exactly.
Now they seem to...
Soft.
Now they're... Yeah. They have a nice...
And they don't last as long, you know, so it doesn't get in the way.
Right,
you know?
That's what I remember, and I still have the VHS video when they first came out with these, and I think it's 25 years ago already. Now, Vinnie Caliuto was the designing factor in these, and he would always call them transparent.
Yeah.
Because they have a beautiful transparency. But I have the VHS video of him describing that.
Yeah. And I, of course, found it on YouTube. So let's hear what Vinnie Colaiuta actually saying about the A Custom.
Hi, I'm Vinnie Colaiuta, and I'm here to tell you about the new A Custom symbols, which represent the next evolution in the A Custom line. The A Customs came about sort of as a confluence of ideas, I think, between myself and the Zildjian family. I called Zildjian up and we started talking back and forth, and I said, listen, you know, I have an idea. And they said, well, we have the same idea. So why don't we put our heads together and why don't you come here and let's kick some stuff around. I had envisioned hearing a cymbal line that was more transparent and prettier and thinner, that still had some sort of definition.
And he was right, it has that. It makes the effect, and it's transparent too. So it's kind of a contradiction.
Yeah.
It does its job and it gets out of the way.
Yeah. And here is the mixer beside the drum seat. So it's always the drummer who has the control.
Sure. Always.
Always.
They don't know that.
No. Yeah. Okay. You
can't tell.
But there's no people here.
No.
Not even your bandmates.
No. We're early. Very early. We usually don't start till about 7:30 for real.
Like,
you know, it's
like
7, but we usually start at 7.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the first set.
Yeah. Do you want to go outside? Where, I don't know where it's cooler. If it is cooler outside.
So let's listen to Chris drums. I found a song from a side project he has going with guitar player Steve Lodicina, Toro Jones. Lodicina sometimes appears in JP Soar's band from time to time, so it's family, kind of. And his name is sort of Italian sounding, so it's maybe the family. Anyway, his setup is a Gretsch Broadcaster 20 bass drum and a 12 rack and a 14 floor tom. The snare is a Supraphonic, Ludwig Supraphonic, 5.5 inch, with a super thin coated head and ordinary ambassadors on the toms. And he uses the Zildjian A Customs and then the vintage hi-hat 15 inch. It sounds great. Just sounds great. Still going. You know, so now we're sitting outside the warehouse.
Yes.
How is it in you play in many strange places.
Yes, we do.
So how has it been after the pandemic? Has thing not stabilized or normalized? Or?
I'd say at this point it's normal. The best way to say it is, you know, everything is at least open for business.
Yeah.
I see some of the crowds are still a little slow, you know, because there's still a concern with some people that don't want to come out yet.
We have the same, you know, some of us think that, you know, because it was for 2 years.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
So people changed their routines.
Sure.
You know, so they look much more on television and do things the other way.
I agree. Last night, there's this strip of road by my house, and it has some nightclubs in it and restaurants.
Yeah.
And it's right on the beach.
Yeah.
And I drove by it last night at 11:30 p.m. And it was dead.
Before Corona, you couldn't. It would take you 45 minutes to do this little half mile stretch because are just going and waving, and you hear the horns blowing, and they see a pretty girl, and they're stopping to talk.
Yeah.
And it was nothing. And you couldn't find a parking spot.
Yeah.
Now I could have parked anywhere.
Yeah,
exactly. I could have got out of the car anywhere and walked in the place where I was heading. So, and it was Friday night. So I don't understand that. But everything was open.
Yeah.
You know, that's what I'm getting at. Everything's open. It's just I don't think the capacity is full. And I don't know why. You know, there's Netflix. There's things. And people have been accustomed to that.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah. Well, they're doing pretty well now, I think.
Yeah, they're doing great. At least they should be.
Yeah.
Yeah, so.
But how about, because it had to be like a year and a half or something that you didn't have gigs at all.
Yeah, well, it was a little shorter for us, and the reason being our government, our governor,
like in Florida.
He declared things to be open sooner. For whatever reason. And there's so much opposition to that. I don't want to get into it. But he, there was a safety protocol which we adhered to when we did start playing. And we wanted to feel comfortable. So we took, for instance, if we were going to do this gig, we would say we're doing it out here. Outside.
So we
played courtyards and parking lots
and
things like that.
Parking lots?
Yeah, there was one club we played.
Like drive-through?
Double roads where we went.
That's a big parking lot.
So we played out on the patio of the club.
Okay.
And then there's a sidewalk dividing it, and people just pulled their cars up and backed them in and sat on the tailgates of their trucks or sat in their car. And we just played.
Like, yeah, just like a drive-in
movie. We did that. And
wow.
And then we did the live stream thing, which I'm sure you saw it. You know,
we did as well, but it was like,
That's weird.
The first time we got some money out of it. But the second time was... We didn't do it too often.
We did it once or twice.
Three times.
I think we did it the third time, and we never. We kind of wanted to get it more professional, I think.
Yeah.
And we had some friends film it and make it, and we just never put it out. It wouldn't have been live, number one, and we just didn't even bother. It was dwindling by then.
Yeah. You know, some might wonder how we met, but we have a mutual friend, which is Terry Hank.
Yes.
And you played with Victor Wainwright.
Yes.
In the what was that? Southern
Hospitality.
Southern Hospitality.
Yeah.
And you were playing on the cruise that JT was that I played with.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Were you in Spitsbergen as well? This place.
Yeah, we sure were.
So
that was wonderful.
Yeah, exactly.
Great memories. Of that.
Cold, but nice.
Well,
it's.
I think we kind of knew that going in.
Yeah. I talked with one of the drivers in Tampa Bay Blues Festival, and he said, "I think maybe I have a jacket somewhere, but it's very thin." You know.
Yeah. Right.
Because. You don't need any warm clothes. So what did you do? Did you bring...
I brought a jacket and layers and long johns, you know, the long underwear.
And gloves. You had to buy it.
I didn't know. I didn't have any. I don't have that. Oh, I had some gloves from skiing because I would ski once a year when I was younger. So I still had the gloves.
Yeah.
Real nice Gore-Tex gloves.
Yeah.
So that was good.
Yeah.
But I wasn't ready for that amount of cold.
So that's how we met, and then we met you many times when we came to Florida before the cruises and all this, and that's been nice. And and then you usually play with JP Source.
Yes.
Which is a guitar player.
Yeah, that's, I would say that's my primary gig, primary job.
But you have a side project together with him, with a kind of a gypsy.
Yeah, you know, we got everything going. We do. We have, he's really in the Django Reinhardt.
Yeah, exactly.
And so we do some stuff in that style, so to speak, you know. And so we record a couple things and brought in a couple different people. Ann Harris on fiddle on things. We have some recording. Nothing's been put out yet, but we did that kind of during the pandemic, you know, when things were getting comfortable. And we.
I remember that from earlier as well.
What?
That you did this gypsy kind of thing.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. We did it much before that.
Yeah.
We had another guitarist, Steve Lavacina, and it was acoustic.
Because you did some of that stuff when you played Ringside at Tampa Bay in 2019.
That? Yeah. Yeah.
I think you did something.
Did we do that? Yeah. See, I don't even remember. We did it acoustic. Like I said, that was the beginning.
Yeah.
With two guitarists, acoustic, upright bass,
and
myself. And I usually just played a snare.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And,
okay.
You know, we'd dress nice and set up, and we'd all sit down and do the Django.
That's cool.
Really in the spirit of Django Reinhardt.
Yeah.
And then it's just adapted to the electric set.
Yeah.
So now there's a couple songs that slip in.
Yeah.
And it's, of course, different because I'm playing a drum set and electric bass and that. So the texture of it's different, but it's still the same song. And it kind of steers things in a different direction.
Yeah, but JP, he has all his fingers in.
He's got an advantage.
But sometimes he plays on only two strings. You know,
That's
a cigar.
He's got to balance it out. You know, Jack had two fingers. He got two strings.
Yeah.
So you know,
it makes sense.
You gotta compromise. You gotta balance it out. Oh gosh.
I found one song from the album Southbound I-95 where JP let his gypsy inspiration come through. Across the Desert. And here we can hear that great Gretsch sound when Chris plays his toms in a rumba variation. Beautiful. But with the original, Terry said something about he suspected that your family was Italian. Is that
true? Yeah, they're Italian. So, my mother's side is Siciliano.
Okay. So, but Pete.
Pete is my father's name, and he was
Holland.
Irish.
Irish.
Yeah.
Irish.
Okay. Irish. And I think if you go back, it was English into Ireland.
Okay.
You know. And I don't know him, so I.
You don't know your father?
No, so I have the blood, but I don't. There's nothing there.
So you raised Italian?
Yes, exactly.
you like Pete. How has that influenced your playing?
Well, you know, it in a great way. And I guess a quick story was when I was starting to play, and I'd always gravitate to the older musicians in town just to watch them and learn. And I just seemed to get more information. And the ego was gone. It wasn't, look at me, this, you know, beating on their chest. It was just these old guys that played.
Yeah.
And I loved jazz, so I would go watch them. And one time, they go, we need a drummer tomorrow night.
Okay.
And they didn't really know if I could play or anything.
Yeah.
They just go, do you have a drum set? We just need a guy to show up with a drum set.
But that was before the Gretsch?
Yeah, that's when I had my first set, which was an old Ludwig. And I still have them. A Ludwig. And it has an 18-inch kick drum.
Okay,
18, 12, 14. Yeah, yeah. And anyway, so, and I didn't, and my grandmother listened to Frank Sinatra all the time.
Yeah,
so,
of course.
So, and I, like I said, I didn't really know what to do with these guys. So we get there, and basically the songbook of Sinatra, Tony Bennett, Count Basie.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it was just an Italian thing around the house was, you know, Sinatra on all the time. And I played it, and they go, how do you know all these songs? And I'm like, it's the Italian influence. Yeah, that was my point I'm getting at, you know.
Yeah.
And he's like, man, you're cutting all the breaks. You're hitting all the punches. You're doing all the right things. He goes, I told you yesterday about this gig. You couldn't have practiced that much by now. I go, you know, I didn't know I knew this.
Okay.
It's just...
in your blood.
It's Fly Me to the Moon. And of course, I know it, but I don't... You know, I never played it.
But how do you... how old were you at that point?
I was about 27, 28.
I
didn't start till later in life. I didn't start till I was about 25. Till I was 25.
Wow.
I know. I was 25. So that's later for most people. Most people play in the garage as a kid or in school. I had none of that at all.
Then you really have something in common with Terry.
Yeah. Just fell into it. And it was just a hobby I was passionate about.
I wasn't aware of that, you know.
Yeah.
Okay. So what do you do before you were 25?
Okay. So, my family was in the car business, car dealerships.
Oh, yeah.
So I want to say, for lack of better words, being groomed to work in the family business.
Okay.
So I'm 15 years old and I can start working. I was right in the car dealership, washing cars, doing odd jobs, sweeping, moving on up. Anyway, fast forward to 24 years old, 25 years old. I was working in the parts department at the dealership.
Yeah.
And this guy, a friend of mine, was moving. And he goes, you know, can you help me load the truck? I go, sure. You know, I'm loading up. He had two drum sets. And he's like, you know what? I can't really take these two drum sets. And he knew I loved music. And going back, I was a huge music fan.
Yeah.
You know, record collections, concerts every weekend, that kind of thing. So I was big into music. My uncle is an excellent guitar player. And I'd go see him play every night. So I was always looking at music, listening to music, but never playing it.
Huh.
And anyway, so he's moving. We're loading the truck. He's moving away. And he goes, do you want the little drum set over there? And I go, I would love that. I go, are you kidding me? Are you sure? No, you're helping me load the truck. I can't take it. We can't even get it in. We packed this truck to the top.
So was he a drummer?
He was a drummer, and he was a great drummer. And I would go watch him at church. His name is James Lee. And I'd watch him play in a Baptist church right around the corner here, the next street over. And he just knew I loved the drums. And he goes, this is just... take them, and they're yours. And anyway, I took them home, and I set them up. And as you know, drums are visual. And being a fan and growing up in MTV era, you see what to do. Like, you see, right or wrong, you know how a drum set is set up.
Yeah.
You know, so I figured it out. You know, I've seen a million bands play. And I just sat down, and I'm not saying I was good right away, but I played.
Yeah.
Like, instantly. You made the beat, you made it happen. And then my Uncle Steve, you know, Steve Siciliano, he's the one that got me on the right path. You know, he gave me like a Beatles tape at this point. It was tapes, still tapes.
Yeah.
For the most part. And he would make me a tape that said, here are songs that you need to know to work in this town.
Yeah.
I still have it. And it says exactly that.
Oh, yeah.
And it was just standards, you know, the Mustang Sallys, all the on wood.
Yeah.
And at that time, that was still a lot of stuff that was happening. Stevie Ray Vaughan was big in the 90s.
Yeah.
So that was on there. Pride and Joy.
Yeah.
And stuff like that. He gave me a Fabulous Thunderbirds tape. He goes, let's just get these under your belt, you know, and maybe one day you can sit in with my band, you know, that kind of thing. And sure, are you kidding me? Every waking minute that I wasn't working, I put the headphones on and played to those tapes.
But did you ever take any lessons?
No, not a thing.
But you mentioned for me earlier that this guy on your list.
Probably Duffy, right?
Yeah. Duffy, yeah. Jackson.
Yeah.
That he had some influence on you.
He sure did. And that's, again, that was all part of this, I like to call it the perfect storm of my life. I was I'm not a bouncer, but I was a doorman at a jazz club. Again, I love music. And I'd take the money or take the ticket, whatever the case was, and let the people in. And one night, it was a jazz band. It was Wednesday night jazz. And I just heard the sound.
Yeah.
The swing. It was just pure swing. And I go, I didn't play yet.
Yeah.
And I was, wow, what is that?
Yeah.
I would love to be able to do that.
Yeah.
And at the same time, my uncle was playing in a new band, and he had this fabulous drummer, Myron Stewart. And I walked in, and he was in a different genre, but he had the double pedal, and he hit really confident. And I go, what is, I love that, and just a series of things like that. And at the same time, my friend's like, I'm moving. Would you like this drum set that I can't fit in my car? And it's like, something's telling me that
this is
might be fun. I still don't think I should be doing this sometimes. But what is that? What is that? And then just all at the same time, these drummers. And anyway, and that's when I talked to Duffy. So that's when we mentioned his name earlier.
But why you talk with him? He was a friend of you?
No,
or?
I was just at that club that
night.
Oh,
yeah, okay.
And then over time, he would do like a regular Wednesday night there.
Okay.
And then I got set. It was the Jazz Showcase, downtown West Palm Beach.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, so you are from
here.
Yeah,
I'm born and raised here, so I'm West Palm Beach. And we had cool stuff happening. It was still really culturally going on. And, we'd see a lot of good bands, especially there. She'd bring in a lot of jazz acts, primarily, to keep the name Jazz Showcase. But she had good blues acts coming through, whatever she could. And that's why I say, so I didn't have to buy a ticket. I take the ticket to the door, and you sit there, exactly. And I'm listening for free. So it was one of those things. And anyway, so I got friendly with him. And I don't remember the exact sequence, but I think I might have said, I got a new drum set, Duffy. And he's like, sorry to hear that. No. But I go, maybe I can get some lessons from you or something. And he was real busy working a lot. And he said, I'm working a lot. He goes, let me just tell you a couple things really quick. And he goes, record yourself every chance you get while you're playing.
Yeah.
And he said, if you have a mirror at home, like a closet mirror or a mirror on your wall. I go, yeah, I got a closet. And he goes, set up in front of that and watch yourself. He goes, two things happen. You hear yourself, obviously. And if you're a listener, he goes, you love music, right? Yeah. He goes, you're going to know what's right or wrong with the sound. And if you have a wherewithal, you'll correct that and make it sound, musical to your ear.
Yeah.
He goes, so that'll straighten you out. And then he goes, and if you see yourself and if you look awkward or you're doing something silly or that doesn't look, you want to look cool, even guitar players, you know, they sit at home in the mirror even before they have a guitar, they've got the broom, So anyway, he just says, listen to yourself and watch yourself when you practice. And he goes, I saw a couple things that, if I did this a long time, my shoulder would be ripped out. Cymbals were too high or something like that.
Yeah.
And I'd hear myself and say, I shouldn't have done that fill. And then sometimes you'd make a mistake and then you'd go, that mistake sounded good. And you kind of did that. And then, he had a bad hip.
Yeah.
But I don't think that was the case. And he would say, I'd have a gig on Thursday. Can you help me set up my drums? My hip is hurting. Maybe he did, maybe he didn't. But I think he just liked the company. And he liked, and I helped set the drums up. So I was kind of his roadie. I'd pick him up. Yeah. I'd set him up. I'd watch him play.
But because he played with some major stuff. He played Count Basie on the last 5 or 6 years of Count Basie's life, didn't
he? Yeah, yeah. He did that. George Benson, he's got a Grammy for playing with Benson.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Ella Fitzgerald.
Yeah, yeah. And
Sammy Davis Jr.
Okay, let's listen a little bit to Duffy Jackson. First, we listen to a clip with the actually Count Basie Orchestra with Duffy on drums and Count Basie as well. Two bass drums, and he looks like the animal from Muppet Show at the end of this clip. It's from YouTube, a song called Wind Machine. You can look it up if you want to. Then I'll play a clip from Big Boss Band, which was a big band project with George Benson. And here you can hear the lovely swing feel that Duffy had and Chris fell in love with at a jazz club in West Palm Beach. Actually, I can hear some of the light feel Duffy has in Chris drumming.
Father was Chubby Jackson, and he played upright bass in the Woody Herman Band, and they lived here in Palm Beach Gardens, and so whenever the tour would end or start, sometimes the bus would stop at the house, and he'd have all these musicians at the house when he was a kid, and he goes, oh, I'd play bongos. He goes, I didn't even play, you know. He goes, I'd play bongos. Don LeMond was the drummer, and I'd play the bongos along with him, and he goes, I met Buddy Rich, and, you know, all the things like that.
Buddy Rich. You heard that story about this letter coming to Steve Gadd. It says, to the best drummer in the world. And he didn't dare to open it. So he sent it to Jim Keltner, and Keltner opened it. And he didn't open it. So he's, you know, fuck, I can't open it. So he sent it to Buddy Rich, and he's, of course, it's to me.
For me, yeah.
And he opens it up, and it says, Dear Ringo.
Right, there you go. That's what my uncle would say, too. He gave me the Beatles. Learn to play this. Because if you can do this, you're you're on your way. or not.
that's so, you know, it says two things. It says, it says many things, but especially about Buddy Rich and Ringo Starr.
Right, right. It does.
But Buddy Rich, of course, he was a...
No, course we love him. Fantastic. Man. There's nothing like him. It's exciting. Yeah. And that's what, you know, initially drew me to drums was the excitement.
Yeah.
Even the guys that played what I think now would be too much, that was exciting to hear feel, especially live, you know. I was at a concert every chance I could go, and just to see... Alex Van Halen was a huge influence. I don't play anything like him. I couldn't. I don't think I want to. But just the way he attacked the drums, and I've seen him so many times, and from a close seat one time, and I'm just like, look at this guy, just viciously. Yeah. There's something satisfying about that.
You know, I was like 16 years, and I was so into music and listening to music.
Yeah.
And I was, of course, playing a little bit, but I was no good, and I didn't have any band, and you know, I just had my drum kit down in the basement. But
yeah.
But I had a passion for jazz.
Yeah.
And I met this guy because we were doing theater together, and he wanted me to help him with the blues club. No, with a jazz club. So we had all these jazz players coming to my town, you know, and I got to go in, even though I had to be 18.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
But since I was in the board for the jazz club,
they let me in, you know.
Yeah,
I got you.
So, yeah, and I helped them with all the gear and everything, you know.
Isn't that incredible? I sat
2 meters from John Christensen, you know.
Yeah,
the,
yeah.
The guy who played with the Keith Jarrett,
yeah.
You know, the Scandinavian quartet. Oh, my God, you know, and these other great Norwegian drummers, you know. So it's
great.
It's very inspiring.
It is, and that's such a, like I say, to experience that.
Yeah.
There's nothing like it, even to this day, when you see someone and feel it, especially when you get a little close,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
Even PAs bum me out, you know, but when you can feel it right off of the drum, right off the stage, I love sound checks.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I love being on the side of the stage just so I can hear it before it gets modified and sent out to the world in the PA, which I'm never a big fan of usually.
No, exactly.
But to feel it organically. Right. Yeah. And I work for a sound and lighting company in town during the day, and I still do sometimes. And they would need a drum tech on certain gigs.
Yeah.
And I would volunteer. Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
And I'd set the drums up. And like, you know, for instance, one of my biggest moments was Elvin Jones.
Oh yeah.
They go, Elvin needs a drum tech. I'm your guy. I raise my hand. I'm him. I'm it. I studied the drums and the pictures. You know, the internet was happening by then, and I'm looking, I see it. I'm to scale, I'm really putting everything the way it looks like he wants it, right? And I set him up.
But he got to be old, but
it was about 5 years before he passed away.
Yeah,
yeah. And he goes, I met him. I'm Mr. Jones. I'm your drum tech, so to speak, quote unquote. And whatever you need, you tell me. I go, I just set him up, preliminary setup. I'll move him wherever you want. He sat down, and he hit him. And the minute he hit him, it was the sound.
Yeah.
It was my favorite thing. There was no mistaking the way he touched the cymbal.
Yeah.
And he goes, leave it. He goes, I love it. Yeah. He didn't move one thing, one inch. Not saying I nailed it. He was just, because sometimes it'll bring something different out of me.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah,
it's not
yeah,
uncomfortable
yeah.
for
yeah.
him.
Yeah.
And his wife was really nervous about it, because she really was, she took care of him at that point a lot.
Yeah.
But she was nice. So I sat behind him for the whole show.
Oh,
and in tears, because I never witnessed such a thing like that.
Yeah, yeah.
And
but you're from here, and I know that Jaco Pastorius was from Fort Lauderdale. Did you ever see him?
Or I didn't see
that's
him.
That's too early, maybe.
I didn't see him, and the company that I mentioned I did the drum teching for, the owner was his bass tech, and he was the one that did the fretless conversion. Well, Jaco did it barbaric.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And he redid it.
He just ripped it off.
Yeah, no, it was bad. And that's what that's how he met him. And this was like in 77. My boss, Kevin Kaufman, he goes at the time, he goes, I met Jaco, and he goes, he was a luthier. He goes, I played his bass. He was nice, and it was awful. And he goes, I could really make this nice for you if you like.
Yeah.
And Jaco goes, I'm the master. It's perfect. And some smart, but he said, I'm the master. It's just how I like it. And 2 weeks later, he said, the phone rang.
Can you help me?
Remember you said you'd help me? And so he did it, and that was that. And they had a relationship for years until the end.
Oh, yeah.
But I never met him. But
okay.
I would hear all the stories.
Yeah.
And firsthand. And
okay.
And yeah. I've held the bass, which was, you know, the famous bass. Yeah. I got the call because it was lost for many years. And I would get calls every day of people saying they found the bass. I found the bass of doom. They call it the bass of doom. I found the bass of doom. And I go, well, send me a picture and I'll let you know if you have it. And no. One day, this guy called. I found the bass of doom. I have it. I need to get with the family. Can you get me in touch? I go, yeah, but send me the picture. And he sent it, and it was it.
Oh, fuck.
And I knew, because it was restored in a fashion that was different from what it used to look like. And I go, oh, man, that's it. So I called Kevin. Kevin, this is not a drill. The bass of doom is someone called and has it.
Wow.
And anyway, it's in Metallica's hands. Robert Trujillo of Metallica owns the bass now. Just talk close to the bone and the skin and the eyes and the lips you can get. And still feel so alone. Still feel related. Like stations in some relay. Or not a hit and run driver, no. Racing away. You just picked up.
But you had access to another base, which is from another legend. I've seen a picture with Donald Duck Dunn's. Tell me the story about that.
I worked at that sound and lighting company. Yeah. This guy walks in, he goes, hi, I'm Jeff Dunn. I'm an audio engineer. And I'd like some work if you have any extra things. So we put him to work and we became friends. And I'd always say to him, you know, kind of teasingly, bring your dad to a gig one time. Bring your dad to a
because
it was his son. It was Jeff is Donald's son. I mean, one of these days, you know, he lived across the state. So we're playing Christmas Eve. I don't remember what year. 2013 or something, and he brings in his dad, and I'm like, what, you know, like Merry Christmas to me. And to meet him, and he was so kind, so nice. I can go on about that. And then we're like kids. Do we ask him to play? Would he play? What if he thinks we suck, you know? Whole thing. We finally, it might have been JP, got enough courage. Would you like to play, Duck? He goes, yeah. So we played 3 or 4 songs. And he liked it enough to come back around. And when we went to across the state, he would he called us up one morning. You know, we played the night before and we're in a hotel. He's like, you boys like Mexican food? Meet me at such and such a place and we'll get some food. And we went and had lunch with him. And,
wow.
And cool. Checked out the bases. Of course, we went to his house
and
played all his bases, and he showed us all his memorabilia.
But you do play bass, because the first time I met you, not the first, the second time maybe I met you. You play bass with me.
Yeah. I do. I love bass.
Yeah.
I think I would have picked it first if the guy didn't give me the drum set.
Yeah.
You know, it was one of those, you know, who knows? But I've always loved bass. I don't know why. The sound of Paul McCartney on the Beatles records.
Okay.
It's just James Jamerson.
Yeah.
I hear that sound.
Yeah.
And my mom played all those records. She was, she Motown, Beatles, primarily those two. And all of course, the California stuff, Carol Kaye and all that stuff. But that didn't move me as much as Duck Dunn, James Jamerson, Paul McCartney. And it might have been the way they mixed the record. I have no idea. But just that sound, it resonated with me. So I started playing. We had a jam, an open mic night. And there was an opportunity. I'm like, you know, we're playing. And, you know, some people, who's to say they're good or bad, but, you know, whatever. They're playing, and then maybe they're not. So I'm like, you know what? I'm going to learn, too. They're learning. Or, they're, some people that are learning, I should say, is the best way to put it. they're learning their instrument, and they come in every Wednesday to jam with us. And there's a drummer coming in to learn. He wants it. So I'm not, instead of sitting there watching or listening or, you know, doing whatever, I bought a bass. And I go, you know what, I'm going to learn how to play the damn bass. So I got it. I went to my friend. I said, show me how I'd play a bass for a blues. Give me the blues. I still really don't know what I'm doing, but give me a slow blues, a shuffle, the kind of thing, the 1-4-5, I guess. And I learned, and just took it from there.
Yeah, but you have to know how to play in a key. And
you do. He taught me that. You know, he taught me the major scale, minor scale.
Yeah.
Of course, the notes, the strings, you know, the all the introductory things. And, man, you just imitate what I heard. So, you know, like I said, I listen to music.
Oh, yeah.
Avid, like you. And everything. You flip out with the record collection I have. With, you know.
Donald Duck Dunn, you know, there is a footage, you know, like not a footage, it's actually a television program from Norway.
Absolutely. 1967. And that's Al Jackson. One of my Al Jackson Jr.
Exactly.
Isn't that incredible? Yeah. That's incredible. And he was playing a Gretsch on that gig. That's part of why I got Gretsch.
I don't know if that was something he brought or...
I don't think so, because they were all playing Marshalls. Yeah, Duck was playing a Marshall. Marshall Major, I think, or whatever they call the bass rig, I think. And Cropper had a Marshall. He had a Gretsch drum set, which I don't think he didn't play a Gretsch in the studio. And... either way, it just was awesome to watch.
Because it's so flawless, you know.
It's perfect.
It's sounds
even the sound. The sound
great.
I that's the sound I hear in my head.
We just need to listen to Booker T and the MGs from Oslo, Norway, in 1967. They're playing Green Onions. Listen to this. But I need to tell you something, because I'm a huge fan of Thelonious Monk as well, you know. And there's footage of him as well from Norway.
Yeah.
And the funny thing is,
what did you guys do to make it sound so good?
Don't ask me.
You gotta find someone.
But
whoever,
actually,
around that did that show.
Yeah, but the Norwegian Broadcasting has tons of, you know, like the best microphones ever, you know.
Absolutely.
Like,
and you
like
hear
those,
it.
Those
Neumanns,
10,000 Telefunkens.
Yeah,
$10,000 Neumanns.
Yeah, I know. You can hear it.
But anyway, the funny thing about the Thelonious Monk footage is that it's captured in University Hall. In Oslo, where the Peace Prize always were delivered many years ago. Now it's another place. But anyway, there's a big picture of Edvard Munch. Just behind where Thelonious Monk is playing.
Right.
You know, it's like... So, but that's a, just a... just a funny,
that's an
funny notice.
Incredible,
but
footage. I think of Frankie Dunlop on drums on that, I think. If I remember right. Yeah, there's probably so much more of that lost that we don't even know about.
Yeah. We talked a little bit about the... What the fuck is this?
Dump truck.
Dump truck. But we talked about a little bit about the gear inside.
Yeah.
But you mentioned that thing to me when we were the other night about the cymbal stands.
Yeah, yeah.
That's your cymbals. Sounds better on Yamaha.
Well, to me.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
They all sound different. And when you get to know your equipment night after night.
Yeah.
And every room's different, but you still get to know your equipment.
Yeah.
I think. At least I do. I know if something was messed up, you know, or different or cracked. Right away. You know, yeah. You just know. And I had a Yamaha cymbal stands and whatever. Maybe they broke or I didn't use them for a while. Or I got this set and it came with Gibraltar stands and I would use them. And the cymbal sounded totally different.
Yeah.
And then I put the Yamaha stands back up and it sounded more open. And it might be the rubber feet isolating it off the floor or the material or whatever. And it's not big. It's splitting hairs. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter to me now, certainly. But it's just one thing I noticed. And that's like the snare hoop. I changed I don't think anyone, you know, you would know, but a few people would know that I changed the hoop on my snare drum. But to me, it's like it's a whole different snare.
Yeah.
And I searched for the right hoop, the right weight, the right whatever to put on that Gretsch snare.
Yeah.
To make it sound like a Ludwig, but for whatever, you know.
Yeah.
Because I played the Ludwig snare so long, and I love like the acrolyte.
But
and,
you have the acrolyte.
I have some signatures on it from Chris Layton and stuff, and I just didn't want to. But I have the Superphonics. I have a bunch of Ludwig snares.
Yeah.
Black Beauty.
Oh yeah.
You know, I have all those.
I have a 6.5 foot Superphonic.
Superphonic, yeah.
But the guy who sold me that, like in 1986, he sent me a message. Is it possible to buy it back?
Yeah, everyone wants their stuff back.
I said, hi. Well, it's, you know, he had it for 6 years and then he sold it to me.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure if I think it's fair that he should have it back.
No, you'll know if it's when you're
because
ready.
Because it's from 1980.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like, it's gold.
It's gold, yeah.
Yeah.
You'll never get another one for whatever you paid for that. You can get one.
Yeah, but of course.
They're ridiculously expensive now.
But actually, I use aluminium Gretsch now with wood hoops.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah, it sounds very warm and nice.
I had an Anton Fig snare.
Oh, yeah.
I wanted the Elvin Jones one,
and I
couldn't find one, and it was a lot more money. And they said, well, the Anton Fig is the same one without the sparkle color.
Yeah, yeah.
And it had the wood hoops, black, and it was a 6.5.
Yeah.
Good drum, man. Nice and warm, like you said.
Did you watch the Get Back on Disney Plus?
Not all of it. I still haven't finished it.
Oh, yeah?
But I'm up to where Billy Preston came in. And,
oh, yeah, yeah.
And lit a fire under those guys.
Yeah. One thing I noticed was that, you know, Ringo, he never did any mistakes, you know, under that. You know, he played flawless every time.
Every time. That's what my uncle gave me to listen to the Beatles.
Yeah.
I get that. And,
like when the way he just, You can see, it's so strange when you see this the Get Back movie, you know, because you see that Paul McCartney actually is making Get Back there and then, you know.
Right, right.
And Ringo Starr is just fooling around, and then he comes up with this groove.
Isn't that crazy?
Which is like, what?
No, yeah, you see him. and you just wonder what his thought process is at the time.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But you do see his gears turning.
Yeah, yeah, like yeah.
Feeling it out, and what sound, what voice to hit on the drum, and then when it's time, something clicks, and it's that.
Yeah. So everybody who's talking about Ringo didn't play the drums and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, yeah.
Crazy. Well, just watch Get Back and you understand, you know, because
please,
you can see
please
that.
Please watch that.
that he's actually doing it. You know?
Yeah, no, there's no doubt.
But you have a gig soon.
I do, yep. we're going to play it's, soon.
It's been a pleasure to talk with you. I know.
We'll have to do part two. There's so much more.
Yeah, it is. It's a lot about. It's a lot to talk about. But
it is.
But you know,
I'm glad you made me think about things that I really don't think about anymore. You know?
That's why I do this, you know, because I need to freshen up my own, you know, my head.
Yeah.
About what I'm actually doing, you know.
But anyway, thank you for thinking of me to even to ask questions. And
yeah, it's nice. Yeah.
It is nice.
Yeah.
Like I said, it's something you don't think of. At least I don't.
You know, the thing is that the drummer tends to have a much better relationship to each other than guitar players or bass players.
I think so. I've always heard that, and I agree with that every time I hear it.
Yeah.
Like, even locally, we have a great drum community.
Yeah.
And we're all friends, and if someone can't make a gig, we call it. There's not much of a competition.
Yeah.
Or at least the ones I know. And, you know, there's a good dozen drummers around town that I'm close to, and we talk, and there's... It's the same thing. Gear, but, you talk about the gear a little bit.
And we have heroes like Jeff Porcaro, who, you know, the whole thing about him is that he would rather call another guy if he thought that would be
better.
They
would
do a better
job. You need Keltner on this session, not me.
Yeah,
you need Vinny on this one, not me. He did it. And we do the same.
Yeah.
A friend of mine called me, you know, that... For whatever reason, he couldn't get the, we call it train beat, you know, the country, you know, and he called me to do it.
Yeah.
He goes, can you just come knock this train beat out?
Yeah.
One song, one thing, and I did. I went over it. I used his set, and I did it, and they tried to pay me. No, it was my pleasure. But he goes, it sounded better than me doing, trying to do it, or having to learn it and come back tomorrow and do it.
Exactly.
And I thought that was cool.
You know, in Norway, we have a Christmas party every November.
Yeah.
We gather all the drummers in Norway.
Oh, that's cool.
So we're kind of 130 people. And we have a drum quiz. And we drink beers. And we just talk to each other.
Yeah,
so good. So now the guitar players are trying to do the same.
They're trying, yeah. It'll never work, man. I don't care. I'm not being negative. It'll never work. Or it will, and they'll leave the place, right?
Yeah.
And that son of a, you know, did you hear what he's had to say about this? Or, you know, they'll go on and on about that.
Yeah, because...
Drummers really don't. At least my friends, not that I know, they're good and just champions for each other at every turn.
Exactly.
They're happy when someone posts they got a new drum set. I'm like, man, it's true.
Yeah,
it's awesome. Yeah. I don't hit the thumb up. I mean, I really am happy for them, and I can't wait to hear how they like it or what.
And it's the same. I'm so happy when I hear someone doing a great job. You know.
Yeah, like, or like, someone gets the gig. Yeah, you know, I'm like, man, yes, I'm so happy. And not to go much longer, but real quickly, like, you asked, like, what a few of my favorite influential drummers are. And I said, and it's still not the famous or the ones you would think. It's not the Buddy Riches and Steve Gadd's.
Yeah,
and I love them. I love them.
But believe me, those, except for the local guy, Duffy Jackson, who is local, but not known.
Knows them when I say that.
But the other four is very often the same as the other. When I ask my other guests.
Oh yeah.
Like Al Jackson Jr.
It's just groove, man.
Many times, and Levon Helm.
Yeah. Oh,
He's like he. We talk a lot about him.
Yeah.
And Jeff Porcaro. Oh yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And Ringo, of course.
Yeah.
But we also always talk about Steve Gadd.
Yeah, of course. Just amazing. Amazing. Yeah. I just put those few guys that actually moved me when I heard something from one piece of music, or many pieces, but, you know, there was a Norah Jones CD that came out. It might have been her second or third CD, and I was driving, and I'm playing it. And I think it was like the third song. It was right on the top of the CD, but there's one song come on, maybe the next song comes on, the third song comes on, for instance, and it I just hear the drumming change. Boom, bah, the snare is there. And it's not a matter of the engineer lifted the snare mic higher. No, whatever. Maybe he did, but I go, something's way different. I got chills just talking about it. So the next red light or whatever it was, I looked, and it was Levon Helm playing.
Wow.
And it changed the trajectory of that CD. And then the rest are just a great drummer, who I don't know, playing, and playing perfect for her. But that one song. And I go, that's what, when someone has to ask me who, that moved me to stop the car or whatever I did and look and see.
So just let us listen to what moved Chris so much with Levon Helm's playing.
What am I?
Brian Blade, actually.
Oh, yeah.
Because I played on a Joni Mitchell album from 2006 or something.
Yeah.
And it was so intensely good.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. I know it, man.
And the sound he got was amazing. And that's a funny story because there's a great drummer in Norway. He plays in jazz festivals. And he was supposed to play after Brian Blade one time. And he came to this drum set and he said, "No, fuck it. I let Brian Blade do the sound check for me.
Yeah.
So I get the sound like Brian Blade."
Yeah.
You know?
And he
came in at the end of the set with he played with what's his name? Wayne Shorter. It sounded really good, you know, when Brian Blade played, you know.
Yeah.
And he came in, now I'm gonna play. And he puts up his cymbals and stuff, you know, and it was like, it sounded nothing, you know.
My friend sat in on Steve Gadd's set when he was with Clapton years ago.
He was
part of a production crew. He goes, "So no one's around." He goes, "So I snuck over there and I not sat on him, because I hit him. They sounded like tubs of crap." This is before he even changed heads, you know, but when he was in that era and they might have been whatever pinstripes that are And he goes, "It was just..." Then he played the show and it just sounded like a symphony.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like it's just the way he hits it, you know.
Yeah.
And
okay, now anyway. Now you, I think you are needed inside.
It
but thank you,
like
Chris, Pete.
Yes, thank you.
We will meet again. Yeah.
more than anything. I know, are good when I see you, you know?
Yeah, okay.
I do, man. You're always smiling, you're always positive. Yeah.
Yes, well, so are you.
Yeah,
so, but anyway, I will play a clip for you when I go out of this, because I need my phone for that. But that's an Italian drummer who was based in Norway.
Yeah.
For many years, he died in Norway as well, but he far too young. But he's so good.
Yeah,
Paolo Venaccia. Paolo Venaccia. He was like the fucking master.
I can't wait to hear it.
And I was sitting in like few meters from him many times in Oslo, listening to him. You know, I was like,
it's incredible. Yeah. To feel it coming right off the drums, from the drums to your ear, direct. There's nothing better.
No.
There's nothing better.
Shalom ice.
Yes, that was my conversation with Chris Pete. I had a good time. I hope you did so too. This episode was brought to you by me and only me. I have no sponsors and I do this for fun, but maybe I should go pro. I don't know. Well, now I did an episode in English. Maybe I should do more in English. So if you English-speaking people out there could give me some feedback, that would be nice. Anyway, this episode, you heard music clips from Toto Jones, GP Source, Josh Benson, Count Basie, Johnny Mitchell, Booker T and the MGs, and last, Norah Jones with Levenhelm. The intro and outro is played by Ian Fredrik Johannesson, Morten Norske, Gerbert Theusen, and me, and that's it. Tune in for more for next time. I'm not sure when, but approximately a month or so. Until then, like and share and fill your life with the rhythm.